Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:14, it's Wednesday morning. Ray is in for Joe. That's me. I'm Ray. Joe is not here. And we have a great panel today. We have the Times Union's Chris Churchill. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Are you in a grumpy mood today? You're
good. A little bit.
You usually are, right?
No, not usually. I don't know. The two New England sports teams lost last night, the ones that are in the playoffs.
The Bruins and the Celtics.
Yeah.
So are you from that area?
I am, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that you have an excuse. Otherwise, I'd be a little upset that you're not a Mets, Yankees, Giants.
We're as close to Boston as we are to New York.
That's unacceptable. we'll table that for now. Also here today is former New York State Senator and SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor Terry Gibson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ray. Happy to be here.
How is the return to politics? You're laying the groundwork now. Last time we spoke, you were getting ready to make an announcement and run again, right?
President? I don't recall that conversation.
Oh, really?
I don't recall
okay.
it.
But Let's go for it.
But I can neither confirm nor deny
that
conversation existed.
He's wearing a Gibson 2020 pin.
Now,
so that tells you anything.
All right.
Fran Berman is here, one of my favorite people because of her relentless optimism. And Fran, you know, the last time I hosted the show, you were not nearly as distinguished, but I see here on the script that you're now the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI. When did that happen?
Oh, that happened a long time
about
ago.
About 10 years ago.
Why was it not on the bio?
Because you have been listening.
Know.
And recent electee. Who are you? I haven't introduced you. You be silent until I introduce you. Fran, also a recent electee to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences.
That's new, and that's big.
New. Welcome, welcome to the show, Francine. Alan Shartok is here.
Now, wait a second. How come you never ask me about my favorite teams for Ultimate Frisbee?
Well, you know what? My son likes the Ultimate Frisbee. Yeah.
It's a California sport.
Really?
Just saying.
It's making inroads here in New York, but the season is a lot shorter here in New York. It's about, you know, week and a half.
3 minutes.
And Fran, one of your colleagues is the tetherless professor.
Yes.
The tetherball.
Yes. Like that. Yeah. My friend Jim Hendler.
And you know that familiar voice. That's the irascible Alan Shartok. And you were just in Studio D doing an interview, and we were kind of vamping until you arrived.
With Senator James Skoufis, who's 31 years old.
Okay.
He's from Rockland County, and he's brilliant.
Okay.
And he doesn't fool around. He tells what
Now, why do you look at Terry Gibson when you say he doesn't fool around? Are you implying that Terry fools around?
Terry was nodding his head. I have great admiration for Terry.
Okay. All right.
Nevertheless, Senator Skoufis took a very well-known trip to the men's room.
What?
That's right. When the question of Cuomo's pay raise came up, right. Senator Skoufis and a colleague walked into the men's room, and they stayed there until the vote was over.
It was a sit-in.
And then they came out, and when the reporters said to them, "What were you doing in the men's room? Why weren't you here for the vote?" They said, "We went to the men's room."
It's an appropriate place to be for a vote like that, I think.
So welcome, Alan. Nice to have you here. And, before we get going with business.
Yeah, business.
You got a thing Friday that you want to talk about.
Oh, boy. It's the great Pete Seeger get-together. We're all going to be singing together all the Pete songs. And Happy Traum is going to be the convener, the guy who runs the whole thing.
A great musician.
He is. He's fabulous and a great friend of Pete's. And somebody who really, really, we wanted to have him come and do this. And he has agreed to do it, as he always has. You know, Happy used to have a program, Bring It On Home, here on WAMC.
Mm.
Years ago, and the homespun tapes and all of that he's done. He's supposed to be the only folk singer who ever made a lot of money.
That's not true. What about Bob Dylan? He made some money, right?
Yeah.
And then he upset Pete.
By the way, wait a second. That's a whole other story about whether he chopped the electric lines or not. Terry's looking.
The Newport Folk Festival in 1965. Dylan enraged many of the folk traditionalists by going electric. They're very upset.
Yes.
And Pete, he cut the cable.
No.
Wow.
No. He's always denied that.
Okay, whatever.
Whatever happened. But in the Mighty Wind, remember that movie?
Oh, great movie.
They show, you know, this bearded guy. chopping away on them.
So anyway, we digress. The concert is in honor of Pete's, what would be Pete's 100th birthday, and it's at our Linda Norris Auditorium on Friday. And if you are interested in getting a ticket for that event, you make a $100 pledge. You give us a call at 800-323-9262. We'll get you in the door.
We will.
But it's, you know, it's coming up now, a couple of days
from Friday.
Now. Right.
I'll be there.
Will you be bringing the banjo, sir?
No.
No, you
but
should.
I will introduce Happy.
You have a banjo hanging in your office.
I do.
If Happy were to say, Alan, will you come up and do a song?
The last one who did that was Natalie Merchant.
I remember that.
And was she sorry?
No, you did well. You rehearsed for about 3 months for a two-minute little clip, but you did great.
Thank you.
So if you know, if you start now, you might be able to play 3 seconds, you know? Yeah. Right? Right? Yeah. Anyway, the email address here, if you want to send us any of your thoughts or reckons, it's panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. Try to keep them brief. No attachments, no links, no abbreviations.
No meanness.
Proofread, if you could. And that's all. One per day per customer. Panel@wamc.org. Everyone wants to talk, and we will talk about the coming bar testimony, but let's cover some other news first. A student with a pistol and no apparent motive killed 2 people, wounded 4 others at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, before campus police disarmed and arrested him, authorities said. A vigil is planned for today at the campus. A campus police chief said authorities received a call in the late afternoon that someone with a pistol had shot several students. Officers assembling nearby for a concert rushed to the classroom building, arrested the gunman. Where the shooting took place. 2 people killed. 3 were in critical condition late yesterday. A 4th person's injuries less serious. You know, these are almost now so common that what do we say on this
problem? Well, they follow California, where this wonderful woman was killed. Ray, and California is, I didn't realize they still had the death penalty. I guess Governor Newsom says no death penalty while he's in office. But there, the prosecutors are keeping it on the table. You know, I have grave problems with the death penalty, and it only revolves around one thing, and that is that when you put the wrong person to death, that's awful, and we have seen a great deal of that happening in the past, really. The problem is, what happens when 25 years from now somebody's gotten a PhD, they've worked real hard, and you say, well, they should be let out now. But meantime, if they've killed 2 or 3 people or whatever happened, or 10 people, you know, they're dead and you're not. That's a big problem. So my issue is, I'm with Mario. Mario used to say, can't kill them, but put them into the cell, and the only thing that they'll hear is the sound of their toilet seat going up and down for the rest of their lives, as opposed to they're totally rehabilitated. But so I always say, what if it were my kid?
So you're talking about Judith Clark, obviously.
Who's that?
Oh.
You know, I think it's just particularly tragic when these things happen in institutions that serve or elevate the public. If you think about the number of shootings in schools and in churches and hospitals and, you know, various other institutions, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, as someone who works at a university, mm-hmm. I will tell you that part of the really discouraging and tragic part of the modern day is we now know how to do a lockdown. You know, we have instructions that tell us what to do if there's an active shooter on campus or, you know, something bad happening, and we know what to do. And it, to me, it's just really tragic that we know how to do that. And it's tragic that there are so many of these things, and we have made so little progress in terms of, you know, addressing the gun control crisis, addressing the whole issue, you know, whatsoever, even though the vast majority of American people don't think it's a good idea, even though groups like the Parkland students really made it their mission to advocate for it. You know, what's going to work? I don't know.
Well, and on the issue of the death penalty, since Alan brought it up, you know, it also has obviously proved not to be a deterrent. If you look at all the mass shootings we continue to have, locking people up, even putting them to death is not the answer to solving this issue. And also, as Fran said, as one who is in a classroom every day with college students, every time something like this happens, I can totally relate to it, and it's a terrifying thought. And I also work in a school where the practice of a lockdown has been planned out. All of the doors have magnetic locks on them so that the school can lock you in the room so that no one can get in the room. I mean, that's a terrifying thought that we've come to that. But it's just now part of our everyday lives. And we need elected officials to step up at all levels of government, especially the federal government, which has been very much lax in addressing this, to take responsibility for the public safety and pass laws that will make it harder for people to get their hands on these killing devices.
What do you think, Chris?
I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that the guns are the only part of this. You know, that this can somehow be solved. I mean, this appears to just be a pistol. We're a long, long, long way from the day when we don't have pistols and, you know, shotguns and various, I mean, not the assault weapon type weapons, but just the more simple type weapons. Those have always been with us, and they probably always will be with us. I think, you know, we're talking about a much bigger cultural problem. I mean, why are people doing these things?
Right.
Why? I mean, there's a sickness out there. There's people are disconnected. There's people are lost, and it's always these young men who are, you know, 20 to 25 years old. Why are they doing
19.
It? Why are they doing it? Until we address that part of the equation, I don't think these things are going to stop.
I think it's absolutely true that people are disenfranchised. I really agree with that. But I think the guns are not an insubstantial part of the problem. And if you look at countries, Australia, New Zealand, and other countries that make it really hard to own a gun, and you look at the amount of gun crime between the time that it wasn't hard and between the time that it was hard, it's really gone down. And yes, absolutely, you have to deal with the disenfranchisement. And I think that's, you know, it's coming out not just in terms of these mass shootings, but in all kinds of other ways, including, you know, how we think about candidates for election. But I do think that the guns are really a big piece.
Well, let's ask you, Fran. You characterize yourself.
So what would
as
you do?
Ex-hippie.
I mean, ban all guns.
You did. You,
not
before
on the
show,
radio,
but beforehand, you said
you've
it.
Outed me.
How do you get rid of the hate? And that's the bottom line. How do you? I mean, I would say that the human condition has been pretty rotten for 2,000 years, right?
I mean, I love that you think I have the answer for this. I wish I did. But
throw one
you know,
out there.
My own feeling is that. I think it's harder and harder sort of to feel connected and impactful with respect to what's going on in society. It's hard to be connected. There are so many groups. It's, you know, at a scale that's sort of unimaginable and at a complexity that's unimaginable. And I also think that, you know, it's just sort of harder and harder to create those qualitative connections in your own life. And Terry and I were talking in the green room before this about, you know, the cyber world. And the cyber world is going through that same thing. It's kind of like Lord of the Flies without appropriate laws and support for the public good and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think in the real world, you've got to feel connected to something and you've got to feel somehow a part of a public and a society that's healthy. And I think, you know, for a lot of us, we've kind of lost that, or at least it's being minimized.
So Fran, respectfully, do you think that the age of Trump has contributed and made the algorithm go faster?
I mean, for me, it's worse now because that's another thing Terry and I were talking about. There used to be, no matter what the political persuasion of the president, some sort of expectation of consistency of behavior and of point of view. And, you know, I think now we've lost that. You know, I think points of view change in a picosecond. And you know, consistency of behavior is not something that we've experienced. And it's almost like constant whiplash being a citizen of this country. At least that's my experience.
Of course, to be fair, people were being killed in mass shootings before Trump.
I don't know if he's a cause or if he's a symptom.
Yeah,
right? I mean, or maybe a little of both.
Right.
Well, we have to take a break here.
No.
We do, sir. We do. And
why?
Mike Bowen, the engineer, has given me a specific out time of 29:20. So I will tell you that Fran Berman is here on the panel. Chris Churchill from the TU, Terry Gibson is here. Alan Chartok is here. If you would like to join the conversation, give us an email, and you can send it, brief email, to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And you are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Welcome back to The Roundtable. It's Wednesday morning, 9:33. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's The Roundtable panel. Today we have Chris Churchill from the TU, that's the Times Union, a former New York State Senator and SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. Terry Gibson is here. Fran Berman, who was recently elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. Congratulations, Fran.
Thank you. Did
you get anything like a cash prize?
I don't think so, but
no?
I get inducted in October.
Cool. And what happens?
Someone asked me, when are you indicted? And I said, well, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. Good for you. Alan Chartok is also here. And how are you, Alan, today? Good. The email address is panel@wamc.org. And I guess we have some letters, Alan.
We do. Okay. So Richard wrote us, "Dear Alan, as a longtime listener and member, I have great respect for your programming, but, underline, please break from the media norm and give the anti-vacciners a chance to voice their concerns. For decades now, we've hidden behind religious exemptions, false documentation, and threats to institutions from our lawyers, but the truth is slowly leaking out. Vaccines are not safe. There's a rally May 14th at 11 a.m. in the Capitol building in Albany. Please do your job and list and come listen to our side." And that's from Richard. I totally disagree with this. I just had, as I mentioned, James Skoufis, Senator Skoufis, on. And he is a profile in courage because he has Rockland County in his district. And he says, nope, I don't deviate from the truth. And the truth is that vaccines are safe. And every medical expert is saying they're safe. And so here's a letter. You wrote it, and we read it. Chris, did you want to say anything on this matter, or is that just going to be reserved for a column?
I wasn't really prepared to talk about vaccines today.
Well, that's why
today.
I called on you, because you aren't.
Yeah. Thanks, Professor.
It's great having Chris Churchill on because he's such a reporter. This is way too early for him to even be functioning. I mean, you're doing a great job, sir.
Thanks.
Well, he's a very funny guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he can be very.
As soon as the mic's off, he's hilarious.
Oh, he can be very funny. Yeah, okay. So
no, I don't know. I mean, I don't fully agree. I think there are reasons that people, the concerns about vaccines aren't totally unwarranted, but I do think, obviously, that the benefits far outweigh the negatives.
Yeah. And we heard from Dr. Joe, who said, "For your information, Ultimate Frisbee."
Yay!
Fred.
Was created in New Jersey.
Oh, no. Apologies, Dr. Joe.
And my high school team, get this, Scarsdale High School.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Was number one team in New York State in 1982, having beaten, it says here, the Bronx School of Science. It's actually Bronx Science, we always say, and Stuyvesant. Most of my classmates went on after college to form the New York Ultimate, who won the Ultimate Frisbee World Championships in 1988 in Belgium. Go, New York. And that's from Dr. Joe.
You know what,
Dr. Joe, I love your letter. And for your entertainment, my fabulous son was on the UCSD Air Squids, and they went to nationals. Oh, my gosh. How many years ago was that?
Hang on. Air Squids?
Air Squids.
Okay.
Yep.
Continue.
Go Air Squids.
What are they?
Over a decade ago.
What's
they
an
were
squid?
An ultimate Frisbee team from UC San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've never heard of the Air Squids?
No.
Yeah. Hard to imagine.
Yeah. We heard from,
what a great hat.
We heard from another Joe from Clifton Park who says, "As your expert panel often marvels over the number of Democrats now running for president, remember that at this point in 2016, there were 17 Republicans running for the
yes.
office, and what a field they were."
And we discussed that many times.
We have. And no need to be defensive here.
Who's
Ray.
Defensive?
And as one of your panel just pointed out, Trump won on the slimmest of margins, 46.1% of those voting and a mere 26.8% of all eligible voters. Very possible that this election 2020 will hinge on how successful the Republicans are in suppressing the vote. And they are very good at that. That's from Joe. do you think?
I think voters' rights is a big deal. I mean, I think that's a really good point to bring up. And the harder you make it for various populations to vote, the more skewed the election will be. And I think it's a really important thing to be focusing on. And I think there is some focus on that now.
Well, there is. And one of the things that's terribly interesting to me is that almost inevitably when you have a inevitably when you have a Republican and Democrat split in legislature like we did in New York, the Republicans in the New York State Senate wanted nothing to do with expanding the voter franchise. And that can be repeated again and again and again in other political situations. So that's that. Chris, did you want to say anything about that?
How come we never call on Terry? You're always calling on me.
I'm hiding over here behind
Terry, over to you.
Wall of microphones.
Yeah, you were the kid in class who never got called on.
I think it's...
What? Yeah. Oh, no, he was the kid in class who always had his hand up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I guess you can tell I'm shirking.
You were the kid in class who was scowling at everybody.
Well, you know, state governments have enormous amount of control over how elections are run, and it does point to how important state elections are, and as Alan said, in many states, both Democratic and Republican legislatures are guilty of taking measures that have made it harder for people of the opposing party to get elected.
And you know why? Because even the Democrats, like in the Assembly, for example, if you start to give money for people to run for office, which we should do, campaign financing, they don't like it because Harry the bartender will come out and run against them. I mean, you know, they'll run against the Democrat also, say, hey, I got this job. It's a matter of primogeniture, and I'll have it for the rest of my life, and my kids will have it after me. And they say, why should we change it? It's good this way. I got elected this way.
Right. Yeah. Voter suppression basically is, you know, involves campaign finance laws. It involves the way districts are drawn, and it involves access to the ballot box. And there are ways legislatively to make all of those three things easier or harder. And local governments do it all the time.
All true. Good morning, panel. Now that the National Rifle Association, a misnomer, by the way, it should be the National AR-15 Association, is bankrupt and imploding, perhaps the Congress will finally pass meaningful gun laws. And that's from Joel in Blooming Grove. Joel writes this a lot. Hope springs eternal. That ain't going to happen. I mean...
But there's a real kerfuffle about leadership.
Yo, that's right. We talked about that yesterday.
Kerfuffle. Yeah, nice.
We did. Wayne LaPierre.
There.
And Ollie North.
Ollie's out.
And Ollie's out.
Oh, Ollie's out. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Ollie's definitely out.
I missed that.
Okay. And Russ says, death penalty versus life in prison. I worked in a state prison. I believe that if society wants to get their Shakespeare pound of flesh from a convicted felon, make them serve a life. A life in prison without any chance of parole. They will have to live in prison with its various challenges until they die. I understand taxpayers may not want to pay for their incarceration, but these are my thoughts for your consideration. Well, Russ, I don't think there's any way around it. I think if you take a life, see, Mario Cuomo, the great liberal, this was his position. It wasn't mine. He said, you know, he was under tremendous pressure to, you know, basically kill people. And he said no. But they should sit in prison and they should never get out. And I understand that because the people you killed are never getting out. Is anybody, are you going to look staring at me? Is this something that you...
No, I mean, that sounds fair. I mean, we're dancing around the Judith Clark discussion, but that's okay.
Well.
Do you think Judith Clark should have gotten out?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I had dinner with her parents one time, and they're gone now. And they were quite clear on that I was just all wrong in this perspective. Now, here's the thing. I don't believe Judith Clark pulled the trigger.
She didn't.
And I think
she
pulling,
drove. You know, getaway driver.
Right, she was a getaway driver, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's felony murder, which is different from pulling the trigger and taking somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we're hearing, as Judith Clark is being, you know, let out of prison, we're hearing from an awful lot of the families of the victims who will never see their fathers.
Yeah.
Never see, you know.
Well, I mean, she goes to the point you were making. She was given essentially a life sentence, and then that sentence was commuted, right?
So, by the governor.
Right.
Who went to visit her in prison.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm firmly against the death penalty, but I think there is a point to be made that if, you know, the life sentences should be life sentences, right? And that they shouldn't be up to the whims of a politician to decide, well, that life sentence is going to not be a life sentence, if that makes any sense.
So that's interesting, Chris. So would you, for example, if you had a videotape of the guy or the woman pulling the trigger and killing somebody and yelling, "I'm killing you now," would you still think that the death sentence would be inappropriate?
Deaths, yeah, absolutely. I don't believe in the death penalty. No, not one bit. I think that's too much power to grant a state. I don't think it's a deterrent. It's never been shown to be a deterrent. And I just think that's too much power to grant any government, because governments make mistakes, you know? I mean,
I said that.
Yeah.
I already said that. That's why I posited it the way I did. Now, you and Terry both said,
and because life is precious,
don't drag me into this argument.
But you did say it. You said it before. It's been proven not to be a deterrent.
Oh, yes, I did say that.
Okay, you said that. So you both said that now.
All right.
Study after study has shown that. When people commit these crimes, they're not necessarily...
Don't beat the horse. Nay,
okay,
I got it.
We've hashed this out. Read the last letter, and then we'll take a break. Come on.
All right. I worked in a state prison. I believe that if society wants to... Oh, we did that one.
That.
Sorry.
Splendid.
That.
Let's do it all over again. Oh,
yeah. And Deirdre says, school shooting. Why is it the USA can't follow the example of New Zealand? One event dictates action. To deny the role of guns is naive and disingenuous. Deirdre from Poughkeepsie.
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead. No,
you're the host, actually.
No, you know what, Terry?
Not going to interrupt you.
I got a feeling you're going to be a man in power soon, so we're going to defer to you. Go ahead.
At least one person thinks that, huh? I think that I agree with the writer's goals. I think it's important to point out that comparing the United States to New Zealand only goes so far. We're a much larger country. We're a much more complicated, complex, diverse country.
Yeah.
And all of those things make it harder for the decision makers to come to the table and agree on something. And
well, it's true, but New Zealand has outstanding leadership, which the whole world really acknowledged.
Woman
at that
leadership,
point.
By the way.
And yeah, and it's a woman, yay! But you know, it's outstanding leadership. Outstanding leadership is outstanding leadership, and it's really important for countries, no matter what their size, to have good leadership and for those leadership to support the public good.
And you got to give Andrew Cuomo a little credit here. I mean, you know, he showed leadership when it came to gun control in New York State.
And I voted for that, by the way. I was there. But what we've learned, no matter how much leadership we show at the state level, when it comes to anything in the realm of gun control, it really has to be done at the federal level, because you can't really control what comes across your borders. You can only control what happens inside the borders.
And even then, you can't control what comes across the borders illegally. And so many of these guns are illegal guns. We have to take a quick break here. Panel@WAMC.org is the email address. The panel consists of Fran Berman, Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, and Alan Shartok. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 9:48. It is a Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The Roundtable panel is here. Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Fran Berman, Alan Shartok, and Attorney General William Barr will face lawmakers in 11 minutes and 54 seconds, if you're scoring at home, and certain TV networks are scoring at home. They'll be discussing a lot of things. But, you know, Robert Mueller released his Russia report, and then Barr did a synopsis. And he's going to defend his actions before Democrats, who accuse him of spinning the investigation's finding in President Trump's favor. A major focus of the hearing is likely to be the revelation Tuesday that Mueller told Barr in a letter to the Justice Department and in a phone call he was frustrated with how the conclusions of his investigation are being portrayed. William Barr, the AG, will also... Well, he's been invited to appear Thursday before the House Judiciary panel. It's still not 100% that he will appear, because I think Nadler and company want lawyers to be able to speak to him. And I don't think he will go if that is the case. So anyway, today it's the Senate, obviously in Republican hands. Lindsey Graham will be holding forth.
Chilling.
Yeah. So, Alan, what do you think?
Well, I don't care what I think. What's much more important is what you think.
What do I think?
Yeah, what do you think about this?
I'm the host of the show, Terry Gibson.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. First of all, from the communications perspective, which is the world I'm working in these days, when you have to manage a crisis, I think it's safe to say that Trump has had a crisis with this issue, you need to immediately try to take control of the narrative. And even though I greatly dislike what William Barr has done, you have to give him credit for having taken control of the narrative. That four-page summary that he put out and that press release that he followed up with completely took control of the narrative. And all you have to do is look at the poll that came out today that Maris just took, I think yesterday, released yesterday, that shows that less than I think 40% of America is interested in pursuing impeachment proceedings. That's because the narrative that they have heard from their news source is that basically nothing happened. There's nothing to worry about.
By the way, I don't agree with that. And we've discussed this several times on the show. I think what happens is, yes, you're right. The Republicans.
Wait, you said you didn't agree, though.
Are you listening?
Oh, God. Here we go.
Are you listening?
This is going to be good.
Check, please.
I'm ducking, just saying. I'm between these guys.
Are the Republicans against impeachment good? That's a good chunk of your 46%. But there are many Democrats, people who identify themselves as Democrats, who think that this is a fool's errand to impeach right now. And they, when questioned, said, should we impeach right now? They're going to say no.
Well, that poll that came out yesterday says that 70% of Democrats do want to impeach.
That's right. The Democrats want to impeach. The Republicans don't. The independents aren't so sure. But the other 30% of the Democrats are following Nancy Pelosi correctly and saying, no, do the investigations, bring them to the bar of justice, but don't. Now, I want to go back to your admiration, your announced admiration because, you know, you made a big mistake there for Barr.
I don't admire him.
No,
I don't admire
him at all. Strategic.
Oh, my gosh. I just think he achieved his goal.
He admired his strategy. I don't. I think it's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
I think it's disgusting.
It is disgusting, you know, but it was successful.
So if you know who goes over the line into Poland and they were successful, that we want to admire them for that? No,
I'm not admiring him.
I
am not admiring him. I'm just saying that his
job. Okay, now I'm going to re-listen to this and see.
Barr's job was to spin the narrative in such a way that it made Donald Trump look innocent. That was his job.
That's right.
And I think that his job was awful.
Well, he did not have to put that four-page summary out. He didn't have to do that.
No, he didn't have to do anything.
It sounded to me like that four-page summary was dictated right from the White House, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, I don't think the White House is smart enough to put that together. I think somebody like William Barr is smart enough to put that together.
No, you're wrong.
I mean, to be fair, Rod Rosenstein, who appointed Mueller, right, was also online with that summary as well.
Well, Ron Rosenstein has his Republican credentials to.
So does Mueller.
Wait a second now. No, Mueller is an honest actor. He's a very decent guy, and we know it. And for him to have written this letter that now comes out today and says, come on now, Barr, you didn't do the right thing here, and you've basically misrepresented what this report was all about.
Well, if Mueller is so upstanding, why didn't that letter come out the day after the summary?
Oh, so what's interesting is it was written the day after the summary.
I know, but why didn't Mueller release it?
Have we seen the actual text?
Yes, it's written in the Washington Post, yes.
I haven't seen the actual text. I've seen it quoted, but I haven't seen the actual letter.
Barr would never let that letter come to light. I mean, he had control lockdown over this whole process.
Well, no, he could. That's not true. Mueller could have released the letter. Mueller could have done it.
Wait. Don't you guys understand? Mueller was the consummate FBI guy. They do the investigations. The politicians handle the results. But his people were furious at who had put so much.
I don't know. When BuzzFeed came out with a report that claimed something that was inaccurate, Mueller corrected it immediately.
Yes,
I mean,
he could have corrected.
I mean, I know Barr is a friend of his. And maybe Mueller admires Barr the way that Terry does. I'm not sure.
Listen. Let's back up here. This has gone far enough. I do not admire William Barr. I am just disgusted
like
as everybody else. No, I just, you know, when you have to look at how people go about communicating their messages, and from a communications point of view, he achieved his goal in that.
my point is that it has put Democrats in an even more difficult position now to be able to take control of the narrative and to spin it back to a place where they can be successful at communicating to the American people that Donald Trump is worthy of impeachment. That what William Barr's summary did was make that job even harder for the Democrats. And today, this hearing, we're going to see just how much of an advantage William Barr has over the Democrats, and that he has already said all he's going to say in that summary and in that press conference today. He's only going to repeat what he has said.
Well, I mean, the report is now out. I don't understand what new revelations they can get. The report is out. The Congress has the report.
There is some question.
I think the Democrats are partly responsible for the fact that the Mueller report was seen as a little bit disappointing. I mean, prior to its release, we heard from not from everybody, but from a good chunk of the people on MSNBC, for sure, that this was going to prove that Trump was a Russian agent, that Trump had colluded, and that this was going to he was going to be led away in handcuffs. I mean,
I never heard any of that.
But that's all coming from the press.
It came from politicians.
MSNBC, though.
Well, one at a time. Right. Terry
all right,
Gibson.
I have a question for Terry. So, Terry, I think it's true, and obviously we've all heard that Nancy Pelosi is saying, don't bother with impeachment. Think about 2020, and people think, they should impeach him, they shouldn't impeach him, whatever. But what if we do impeach him? What happens then? He's not out of office.
I don't think that
she's
saying...
So what happens?
I don't think she's saying don't bother with impeachment. She's saying keep that there as an option and let's do the investigations, let's do the interviews, let's do the
background
checks.
And then Hillary Clinton says go through the process, right?
So I don't think she's saying no, don't do it. But I think we all understand that that the Senate is never going to go along with this, and so therefore it's not going to end in a place that's going to remove the president. We all understand that.
So that's why she says don't bother with it. It's kind of
that.
A non-starter.
I don't think she's saying don't bother
with it.
But
what happens if we do? Nothing happens. He's still president.
Well, look, at some point you have to – there is a point at which you have to say, as an elected official under the Constitution, I have some responsibilities that go beyond just getting reelected. And they are to investigate things that fall under our domain that may very well reveal that people in executive power have abused their power.
But
being
impeached does not kick him out of office.
No, but it does bring to light the facts. It does put the facts.
Well, you can do
table.
That anyway, can't you, Senator?
Well, hopefully. I mean, hopefully that will happen. But but the impeachment process gives them a little more power than they would have without it.
You're a Democrat.
I am, by the way. Proudly.
Isn't it more politically expedient to continue to beat this horse without impeaching? in other words, look at the midterm results. The Mueller investigation was going on year two by that point. Midterm results were huge. I mean, isn't Pelosi right in saying, oh, yeah, well, let's not impeach. Let's just keep hammering this until the election.
I certainly believe that.
I think that...
when Raymond offers an opinion, he almost always does it in the form of a question.
I think the Democrats have to make an effort to spin back this narrative to make sure the American people understand. And that report, I think, has an enormous amount of information in it that shows that this president has engaged in activity that is borderline illegal, borderline an abuse of power. And the American public needs to make sure that they understand it and have it put before them in a way that allows them to process it. And what William Barr did was try to take that away from them.
Did he lie is the question. Did he lie?
Yes. Barr? I think that Barr did lie.
Barr lied.
I think Barr took things out of context, and I think that he said things in such a way that misled the public in a direction that he wanted to lead them.
No, it was more than that. They asked him specifically whether or not he knew that Mueller was unhappy with the way in which he had characterized that, and he said he didn't know. That's a lie.
Don't you think it's ironic that we all want to slam Cambridge Analytica for manipulating the American public, but it's okay for William Barr, too?
I think it's worse than ironic.
And all the networks, by the way. Let's take a break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Fran Berman is here. Chris Churchill is here. Terry Gibson is here, and he's obstreperous today.
Oh, boy.
Alan Chartok, always here, and we'll be back after noon. Welcome back to the Roundtable, and thanks to our engineer Mike Bowen for putting the West Montgomery bumper music in, sir. Well done. It is the Roundtable panel, 10:06 on a Wednesday morning. Ray in for Joe. Alan Shartok is here. Fran Berman is here. Chris Churchill and Terry Gibson is here. And, you know, during the breaks, it gets very exciting, and I've never actually seen this before, but if you were listening into the last segment, Alan intimated that Terry Gibson, noted Democrat, was a real fan of Attorney General William Barr. Well, in the break, Terry Gibson hauled off and slugged Shartok in the head. And it was, I got to say, it was a sight to behold. Everybody's fine, though. Everybody's fine.
Here's the problem. Yeah. Somebody out there is going to believe it.
All right, it didn't happen. You can watch it online at WMC. Yeah, I engage in some hyperbole.
I defended myself verbally.
Theater of the mind.
We're kind of a nonviolent group, right, just saying. Yeah,
right. So far. Speak for yourself.
None of that's
still
true.
Half hour left.
Right. You don't know what happens.
We have letters. Oh, God, we got a stack of letters.
You don't know what happens when you're dealing with the Shartok twins. Okay,
really?
Yeah. Poll impeachment. I don't agree with Terry. If you look into those numbers a bit more, a majority of Americans, including independents, think Trump is guilty of obstruction and is a liar. Those numbers fall off with impeachment issue, but it is probably because pundits are telling them that is a losing issue going forward. That's a reasonable letter, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I think all polls are open to, questioning.
Well, no. I mean, I think that there are people who want to see the guy impeached, but who think this isn't going to happen, and this is the wrong road to go down. I happen to be one of them. In fact, I think I said it day one, and have been saying it ever since, no matter what Chris Churchill says.
You and Nancy.
It's all right. Stand back, Chris. It'll be all right. It's only about 17 minutes to go.
Janina says, Barr, the four-page report sounded like it was written in advance. You think? Also, please don't say that Barr, quote, did his job. That's you, Terry. That's you that's getting this.
Well, look. His job is clearly to protect the president. That's what he's doing.
Well, that's not really in the job description of the AG.
No, it is not his job.
It doesn't call for admiration on your part.
He's clearly been hired to protect the president. The president hired him to protect himself.
We all know that.
So he's doing his job.
We all know that.
I don't agree with the job he's doing.
But you seemed, we're all going to go back and listen to the tape. You seem to admire him for doing
it. You know what? You guys are on the same side. Alan and Terry are. Why are you arguing? Will you stop? I mean, Fran is getting upset.
I would like to see Barr resign. He should be removed from office. I think he should resign. I think he has violated his constitutional duty of office by protecting the president and not being the lawyer for the country, which is what he's hired to do.
Also, please don't say Barr did his job by controlling his narrative. That is not his job, in capital letters. He's supposed to be attorney general.
Well, that was just what you talked about.
Terry's going to send out a tweet that says, hashtag not his job.
You're going to have to send out a press release later.
He's trying to make up for what he said before.
I'm not trying to make up. Okay. I'm just stating the facts. Right, we have an illegitimate attorney general in office that is acting in an unconstitutional way, and he is doing exactly what the Trump administration hired him to do.
Jeff said Barr. Barr's job wasn't to make the president look good. True, he succeeded. His job is not to be the president's lawyer. He's the lawyer for justice for the American people. And that's from Jeff from Colony. And then we heard from Alan, who said impeachment. Terry is right. Terry is correct to say that impeachment, despite not removing Trump, puts it on the record that, no, this is not okay. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be—
Terry loves you. Just saying.
What'd you say?
Terry loves this listener.
Well, sure. Well, sure.
Just saying.
However, they're both wrong.
Do we know Terry didn't write that letter?
Signed, Terry.
Terry is my favorite. Love Terry.
And Michael says, gun control. Go ahead, try to take the guns away. I guarantee you 100% there will always be a way to get a gun on the black market. You will never get the guns off the street. What do you think is going to happen when only the bad guys have guns?
There's going to be a lot less shootings.
Okay. And then we heard from Christopher from Altamont. Hello, Alan. I love your show, and your opinion on the death penalty is 100% accurate. Letting someone rot in prison is a far harsher sentence than the death penalty. The prisoner has to contemplate their actions for many years if given life, but the death penalty gives them a way out. And that's from Christopher. Well, I suppose we could go into that a little bit. People are capable of offing themselves if they really wanted to die, right?
I thought you were a supporter of the death penalty.
No.
No, you're against?
I've always been against it. Not conceptually, only because there is always the chance, and that has worked out many times, that people who didn't do it got fried.
I'm sure you explained that earlier.
I did.
I was miles away. Go on.
You're probably thinking of, what's the name of that stuff?
Bellmead Bourbon.
Bellmead Bourbon.
Possibly. Yeah. The more you speak, the more I think of that, actually.
Yeah. Well, I get it. Yeah.
Okay. Continue.
Roselle, write down Bellmead Bourbon.
Oh, cut it out.
Bourbon. We got to go get him some. Charlie from Pine Bush says this. Looking at the civil war brewing in Venezuela, it seems plausible that Trump may use this opportunity to get reelected. The rhetoric points are perfect for him with socialism and Latinos and oil on the forefront. If Trump escalates our involvement in Venezuela, it would cement his hold on the presidency while allowing him to prove he can be tough on Russia by forcing Russians out of Venezuela. Presidents get reelected during times of war, and this is an easy conflict to fabricate. And that's from Charlie from the Pine Bush.
I think that's a very interesting
that's an
letter.
Interesting
and
letter.
I think there's something to it. I am curious and very concerned about how this presidential administration is dabbling in Venezuelan politics.
Well, you know they are.
I know they are. I mean, they say they are. Yeah. They're very clear about that. But knowing that the chaos that reigns in our own country, and it's hard to imagine that this president can intervene in a way that would be productive. But it may very well be something that could help his presidency.
But you know, the Russians are interesting here, because these are the same Russians that Trump says he loves, that he has made clear that he is a fan of. And the Russians called up Maduro and said to him, don't leave,
right.
even though the plane was on the tarmac. Remember when Mario's plane was on the tarmac? But I digress. That's another,
that's another story.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
but what
we're not the only country backing Guaido. There are a lot of countries backing Guaido.
Yeah.
But countries that are currently, I guess, maybe politically slightly more stable and don't have an extremist president tweeting out every moment of his life about what he thinks about things. I mean, that's what separates us from those other countries right now.
This is a tough one, though.
You don't think backing him is the right thing to do?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the way that we're going about it, via Twitter and via, Donald Trump making his sort of random comments about it, I think can be very dangerous, because it requires great diplomacy, it requires great strategy, and I think a lot of it, does not need to be done in the public domain over Twitter and Trump.
Chris makes a very good point, though. I mean, that country is going to hell in a handbasket. There's no two ways about it. So there's really no way that one can be defensive, even though, if you hate Trump's guts in all of this. But what I'm interested in is the Russians call Maduro and they tell him to stay there. And these are the same Russians who we are now opposing in Venezuela who Trump admires. Don't you see?
But the Trump administration was pressuring Maduro to leave long before this latest what happened this week, which is part of the reason why that collusion narrative was always so nuts. Like, if Putin had something on Trump, he wouldn't have been opposing Putin in Venezuela.
Well, and it's easy for you to say, but we're hearing precious little from Trump on all of this. So,
I don't know.
Trump is tweeting on this all the time.
So Trump is tweeting. On the other hand,
he has something on him. It's possible. It's a complex sphere where they agree to disagree on some things, they agree not to disagree on others.
You're a brilliant friend.
What terrifies me about this is that because we are working with other countries, and because it does require a collaborative approach, and because it is incredibly important, and it is in our best interest to help in this situation, but Trump could literally screw this up for not only our country, but for all the other countries, and for even the people of Venezuela, because of his constant need to jump into the conversation without having any type of strategic process to back his thoughts.
And they want the oil. They want the country.
It could be a very damaging way to go about managing the situation.
Okay, should we go on?
I
have no idea.
Guns are people, says Jake. If the guns were the problem, then why don't 300 million guns in our country jump up and cause death and destruction on an
apocalyptic?
That's the one.
Survey said
apocalyptic scale. Alan, you interviewed Dr. Warren Farrell about his book, The Boy Crisis, a couple of weeks ago. He got it right. The biggest problem here is the crisis with boys and young men and why they are lashing out with violence. Until we address the issue, the tragic pattern will continue. Thank you, says Elaine. for speaking on the escalating problem of innocent lives lost their guns in the wrong hands. This Tuesday is Gun Safety Lobby Day, put on by Everytown for Gun Safety. It is being held from 10 to 4 in New York State Capitol. They are advocating for red flag laws which aid courts at removing guns from people in crisis. Currently, even if they are reported to authorities by their own families, law enforcement can't take steps to prevent behavior.
Great to know. Thanks for writing.
Measles misinformation. Please do not legitimize non-vaxxers by reading their conspiracy theories on the air. Oh. Now our job is to not give people a right to write to this program, and we'll pick out the ones which we like and don't. I made it clear I didn't like it. But anyway, according to the World Health Organization, 110,000 people died, mostly children under 5, from measles in 2017 from WHO. During 2000 and 2017, measles vaccination prevented an estimated 21.1 million deaths from making measles vaccine one of the best buys in public health. Well, Bobby, I agree with you, but I'll be honest with you, we will never not read people's letters.
Well, I loved what Chris said. I think Chris said something really important, which is there is no medical treatment that is perfect. You know, all of them have, thankfully, rare downsides. That includes vaccine, that includes heart medication, that includes chemotherapy, it includes pretty much everything you take.
Right.
And the fact is, not taking them is so much more risky in general than the rare instance of something going wrong when you do take them, that we all hedge our bets. It's like we live on Earth every day. Earth could get blown to smithereens at any point, but we still keep doing it. So just risk-wise, for me, I don't buy the argument that because vaccines can very, very, very occasionally be bad for you, that everybody shouldn't take them. I think it creates a much bigger public health problem.
As a parent of a young child and someone who talks to a lot of other parents, I can tell you that there is a lot of fear out there about vaccines. I mean, call it a conspiracy theory or whatever, but the fear is very, very real. And you're going to have to counteract that somehow. I don't know how exactly you do it, because it's very hard for truth to truth doesn't travel any faster than misinformation. You know, I mean, that's kind of the defining story of our political age in a lot of ways. And the fear is real, and people are really worried about this. And the government just saying, well, you have to do it, I don't think is necessarily going
to
solve
the problem. Well, they don't only say you have to do it. They also do tests. I mean, for example, there's the whole autism untruth, which has been voiced so many times. They've investigated, and they say it's just not true.
The president himself said it. He said it in one of the debates. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. We heard from Reed. Today's hearing will be a circus. I think that the House committee is attempting to do what the House committee is attempting to do tomorrow should be the new standard. We should expect our attorney general to be overly equipped to answer pointed questions from legal professionals. And thanks from Reed. I don't get that whole thing. Now, Terry, you've been on committees. The big fight in the House is whether or not Nadler's lawyers, the lawyers
right.
of the committee,
yeah.
should be allowed to ask yeah. the questions. And I do remember the Army McCarthy hearings where Bobby Kennedy and others were asking the questions. That's how old I am. Nevertheless, one wonders how this is all going to work out, because I don't understand why Senator X can't be standing, the lawyer can't be sitting right behind Senator X and then say, ask this question.
They always are sitting behind you anyway. All those people you see sitting behind,
yeah.
right now on CNN, all the people sitting behind
Senator
the people
Feinstein.
That are talking, they're all lawyers. I mean,
most of the staffers
are lawyers.
Most of the lawmakers are
yeah.
lawyers.
So, you know, and you see them lean over all the time and whisper in their ear, hand them notes. So being able to have some control over how questions are asked and answered is something that happens all the time. Why they feel the need to have the lawyers do it directly,
well, it's all theater, babe.
I'm not really sure.
Well, that leads to Nadler. Because, the real question is, does he really want what he says he wants? or does he really want Barr to be in a position of saying, no, I won't come to your committee? And they already have the Democratic senators and Kamala Harris and others on the Senate side asking these questions.
Yeah.
Does he really want, would he rather have the fight? No, I'm not going to come. I'm going to defy the subpoena.
No, I think he wants the facts. I think he's trying to do everything he can to try to get a factual statement that he can use to begin to build a message that will be successful in communicating that something here has happened that's worthy of investigating further and possibly impeachment.
Stephen says prison, etc. Before anyone comments on how anyone belongs in prison or any long-term lockup, they should have some direct experience of it. No one belongs in a cage. No person, no animal, no one. I understand the need to prevent violent and other offenders from reoffending and how society may not presently have another solution. This doesn't explain that they belong there. The idea that they belong there is a shallow and glib assumption, and that's from Stephen.
Well, let's make another shallow and glib assumption.
Please.
People shouldn't kill other people.
There is that.
You know, that would be a good start for humanity.
And if they do, then the question is, where shall they go? In other words, can we make our prisons better? You bet we can. You bet we can. But the idea that nobody should be put in a cage seems to me that the alternatives sometimes are, do we exterminate this person from the earth, or do we say, look, you did a terrible, terrible, terrible thing, and we're going to do a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to you.
Well, also keep in mind that most of our prisons are not populated with people that have killed people. They're populated with people that have done things that did not involve killing or even a firearm.
Yeah, there's that. I worked in prisons for 24 years. I started as a volunteer, and I retired as a commissioner. This is from Scarlett. I believe the life in prison is really the punishment. If someone who has a deep religious conviction, they welcome the death penalty because heaven awaits. Life in prison is, and I have witnessed this, true hell. Scarlett.
Okay, thank you. I've only got about 2 minutes here, sir.
Do you want me to read these, or do you want to
just yell at me? I would love it if you could read them in 2 minutes.
Okay,
actually,
here we
less
go.
Than two now.
Sandra says, I believe
152.
Ray, I like this sentence. Sandra says, I believe Ray is mistaken in his statement that so many of these guns are illegal guns. If memory serves, I do not remember very many, if any, mass shootings where the guns were illegal. I believe most, if not all, guns used in mass shootings were legal under the laws of their respective states. Okay. And we heard from Paul, who says, good morning, panel. Thoughtful discussion, as always. Two questions. Did not Secretary of State Pompeo say yesterday or the day before that Venezuelan opposition leader was elected? I thought he assumed the position of acting president on a constitutional basis. Secondly, it seems like we're getting into proxy conflicts with Russia in Venezuela and other places. Where else besides Venezuela? And where is this leading us? And that's from Paul from North Adams. And Elias, otherwise known as Ilias. The nation needs to follow New York state gun laws, which allow every law-abiding citizen the right to gun ownership while doing everything possible to minimize access to guns by criminals. If New York state laws were adopted by the nation, which is essentially the goal of the Brady Initiative, death by guns would be substantially decreased.
Okay. Two more, and then we got to go.
That's all I got.
Okay.
Brandon says, vaccines. Do you realize that the standards for testing of vaccines are practically non-existent? There are several experts that work in pediatric field that say vaccines are not 100% safe, something Fran already told us. Most pediatricians don't even know what is in a vaccine because all they learn in medical school about vaccines is that they have to stick by vaccine schedule. And then Sean writes, from Sean in Stone Arabia. What's Stone Arabia?
I don't know, but we have 30 seconds.
I'm going to read it only for to Fran's point. Yes, gun crime has gone down in Australia and New Zealand since the gun bans, but it has also gone down dramatically in the U.S. during the time period, even as gun ownership has gone up even more dramatically. And that's all I can read because
well,
Ray won't let me read it.
Exactly. We are finished now. And thanks to Fran Berman, and thank you to Chris Churchill, and thank you to Terry Gibson, and as always, thank you to Alan Shartok. Thank you for listening. Now, there's a lot more roundtable ahead. We have some good stuff here, and I lost the script, but I can tell you that there are exciting things ahead. It is the Roundtable. It is WAMC, and we'll be right back.